to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Anime from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animats Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, what have you been waiting for, man? What took you so long? We have all been waiting for you to come on by and listen to me talk about the latest news that happened this week. So come on down, relax yourself, and come and have a good time. So for this episode specifically, we are going to be looking into Disney's big step in order to create their own streaming service. And then afterwards, we will be looking into the trailer of what is said to be the first ever oil-painted animated feature. We'll figure that out, what it means when we get to that story. Then afterwards, we will be talking about Gru and his minions and how they have officially become the new kings of animation. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the differences between the animated film and the upcoming Broadway version of Disney's Frozen. And then finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. Now, if you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And before I begin with my first story, I just want to have a quick shout out regarding the recent tragic events that has occurred in Charlottesville, where you got a whole bunch of thin-skinned Nazis coming in and pretty much causing violence and spreading their toxic white supremacy all around the area. And it's just horrible. It really does prove how all white supremacists really are just white terrorists, arguably even worse than ISIS even. But I just want to mention that throughout these tragic events, that if you really want to go and combat these people, like these Nazis, these KKK members, these white supremacists, these Trump supporters, and all those people, if you want to attack their hate, then all you have to do is use love. To go out and see people that are people of color or people of different religions like Judaism, Muslim, Buddhist, or Hinduism, or anything, just basically a person that is not white or Christian, and give them a good amount of love and respect. Just go out and do that, because those people really do need it the most during these dark times. So before I get things started, my message to you is just go spread love, not hate. Do not be a white supremacist. Okay, so with all that said and done, let's get on to our first story right over here. And this is one of the big stories that actually occurred that is going to be a massive game changer when it comes to streaming services. Specifically, though, with what's going to happen with Netflix and with Disney. Now, the biggest news is that by 2019, Disney has announced that they will be taking away their movies from the big name streaming service. So by 2019, you're no longer going to be able to go and see some Disney films. Now, you might be wondering, why is that? Well, Disney decided to go meet up with Major League Baseball and own 75% by giving them $1.58 billion in order to get the majority ownership of BAMTech. So that means that now that they have 75% of BAMTech, they are going to go and open their own streaming service. Two of them, in fact. The first one is going to be entirely ESPN-based, which that one will be opening in 2018. And then, when 2019 rolls in and their movies are no longer connected with Netflix, then Disney is going to be opening their own streaming service. And Bob Iger actually did release a quote mentioning about this this majority acquisition of BAMTech and trying to open their own their own streaming service. He stated, "This acquisition and the launch of our direct-to-consumer services mark an entirely new growth strategy for the company. One that takes advantage of the incredible opportunity that changing technology provides us to leverage the strength of our great brands." So basically, he's just looking for more ways to make money. And he decided, you know what? Netflix makes a lot of money when doing Netflix. Why don't I go and make more money with my own thing? So people, don't throw your money at Netflix, throw your money at Disney! That's basically the whole idea, though. Now, you might be wondering, however, how is this Disney Netflix or Disney streaming service gonna work out? Well, using my source here on Variety, it did state, the new Disney-branded service will become the exclusive home in the U.S. for subscription... I might be pronouncing that wrong. Hold on. The new Disney-branded services will become the exclusive home in the U.S. for subscription video-on-demand access to new releases from Disney and Pixar, beginning with the 2019 theatrical slate. Those are set to include Toy Story 4, the sequel to Frozen, and The Lion King from Disney's live-action division. So that's the main idea about what they're going to do with it. But also, there is an additional aspect of it. In addition, Disney said it expects to make a significant investment in the annual slate of original movies, TV shows, short-form content, and other Disney-branded exclusives for the service. The subscription service also will feature library content, including Disney and Pixar movies, and shows from Disney Channel, Disney Junior, and Disney XD. So that's, basically the whole idea is that Disney wanted to make their own Netflix, but specifically for the Disney brand. So you can go and find some Disney shows, and you can also find some recent Disney movies. And on top of that, they will go and update it so that they could also include some of the more recent films that they will be releasing in 2019. However, some of you might be wondering about a big question, and this is related to Disney. What are they going to do with Marvel and Star Wars? What are they going to do with all the Marvel movies and the Lucasfilm movies? Well, currently, they're not 100% sure of what they want to do. It's still up in the air, rather, if it's still going to be with Netflix or if it's going to be on the new Disney streaming service. In fact, if I move to another source here onto MovieWeb, it actually stated Reuters is reporting that Disney and Netflix are currently in active talks regarding the streaming rights for Marvel and Lucasfilm projects after 2019. Disney Chief Content Officer Ted Sarandos said, "We are still in active discussions with Disney about the possibility of securing a deal retaining the rights to stream Marvel and Lucasfilm Star Wars releases onto Netflix after 2019. So they are pretty much Netflix is hoping that they could still have some of what Disney has created, including the Marvel movies and the Star Wars movies. Personally, I feel like if Disney really wants this streaming service to be a massive hit, then they gotta move the Marvel movies and those Star Wars movies onto that service. Because honestly, if they're just gonna go with Disney, then they're only going to get the family crowd. At least with Marvel and Star Wars, they'll be capable of getting the older crowd, especially if it's going to encourage them to go and create marathons onto their service. Disney would be capable of letting audience to go and actually have an entire Marvel Cinematic Universe marathon, since when 2019 rolls around, the final Avengers movie is going to be released. Well, not the final, but at least the final one in this giant movie arc that's going on until they would release the sequel to Spider-Man Homecoming, in which that one is going to start a brand new story from there. So, at least from that, Disney will be capable of doing all those films, and eventually it'll help bring up the hype. And even with Star Wars as well. If they are bringing it there, then we don't know how far they would actually include it. Would they just include the ones that Disney created, just Force Awakens, Last Jedi, Rogue One, and the Han Solo spinoff film? Or are they also going to release some of the classics, like the original trilogy, or even the prequels as well? I don't know if Disney fully owns the prequels. They are happy that they have the original trilogy, but the prequels, I'm not 100% sure. But anyways, now that will remain as a big mystery. And I think a big question for me regarding this entire streaming service is going to be, how is it going to work specifically? Like, how many shows and movies are they going to be including in this? And how many is there not going to be in there? Because I don't know how this is fully going to work. Are they just going to do a rotating system that some of the movies are just going to be there for a limited time? Are they only going to be including some of the new ones and some of the old ones? Are they just going to feature the new ones while the rest, well, they're just going to have it backlog in their home media division and they'll take care of that? I don't know. It's more of a mystery. And this thing just recently announced, so we don't really know the details of how Disney is going to work out this entire streaming service. That remains to be seen. And while I don't really know how this is going to go for Disney specifically, I don't know if this entire streaming service is either going to be a massive hit for them or if this is going to go as well as their video games division. One thing I do know is that this entire announcement and this entire plan Disney is doing is really going to screw over Netflix. Because even right at the announcement that Disney is going to cut their ties with Netflix, what happened afterwards was that their stock actually plummeted down to 5%. Even though, sure, 5% doesn't sound like much, but in stocks, that's almost a nightmare right over there. And in the long run, I can imagine it, like, really screwing them over. Because keep in mind, it was recently reported that Netflix is in debt for $20 billion. And the reason why they got themselves into debt is because they were so desperate in creating so many brand new original content that you can get exclusively onto Netflix that it really was more of a burden than it was a blessing for them. Like, they really are a bit in financial troubles. Now, analysts did state that they're not really in trouble right now. They are okay in the position that they are in, but they did state that in the future, this $20 billion debt will bite them in the butt and it could potentially really screw them over. And I think with the case of Disney right over here, with the fact that they're going to no longer be associated with them and go on to make their exclusive streaming service, I feel like that could really be the crack that would eventually grow to the point that it would break the entire thing. That's at least how I feel. Because once Disney is no longer with Netflix, I am pretty certain that Netflix will be losing so many family subscribers. Like, even if Disney decided that Netflix would keep the Marvel movies and the Star Wars movies, they're still going to lose a whole chunk of family subscribers that they're just going to end up moving on to Disney. And especially if Disney is just going to do a US-only based streaming service, then this can also seriously affect how it is worldwide, that the international subscribers might let go because, well, the Disney films are no longer there. It really is going to be that effective. Now, I'm not saying that Netflix is going to end up losing half their subscribers or anything like that, but just a significant amount that would be noticeable. Like, I would say a few million subscribers that are going to drop off because of this whole Disney situation. But overall, it remains to be seen how this is going to go. Sadly, as a Canadian, I guess I'm not going to see what Disney is going to do with it, because again, this is what Disney seems to be going for with this is just a US exclusive service. So who knows how this is going to go? Maybe this will work out for Disney, or maybe this is just going to be really screwing over not just Netflix, but the entire industry of streaming service. Because that's actually one big thing that people are definitely worried about if this becomes a big hit, that this is going to encourage other companies to go and create their own little streaming service that in the future, like in 2025 or something, we'll have a Disney streaming service, we'll have a Universal streaming service, we'll have a Warner Brothers streaming service, we'll have a Sony streaming service, we'll have a Lionsgate streaming service, and we'll have a Paramount streaming service, and we'll have so many different services, it would be down to the point that it would actually cost more to have all these different streaming services than to actually have cable. You know, it would go to the point that it would be absolutely ridiculous. And basically, it might end up just more people becoming like me and just, you know, collect as much DVDs and Blu-rays as they can, because that's starting to become a relatively cheaper option than just going digital and watch them on Netflix or any other streaming service and stuff like that. It really has gone ridiculous, but who knows how this is going to go. Like I said before, maybe it'll work for Disney, maybe it won't, but we'll just have to wait and see in 2019 how things are going to go with that plan. Okay, so for our next story right over here, we actually have a very unique animated feature. And there was a brand new trailer that was released, and I gotta say, holy crap, I am absolutely impressed, more so than for any other animated film released this year. And the big significance with this is that it claims itself to be the first ever fully oil-painted animated feature film. And what I am talking about is a movie called Loving Vincent. And this is actually a very interesting film because in a way it is almost a biography of world-famous artist Vincent van Gogh. Now, for those of you that know who Vincent van Gogh is, then you probably know that not only is he the legendary painter behind Starry Nights, but he's also a frickin' whack job. During the time of his living, he was known to be absolutely crazy, he was mentally disturbed, he had to legitimately go into an asylum, and of course, he actually cut off his own ear. And with that said though, what Loving Vincent seems to be trying to do is not necessarily an entire biography of Vincent van Gogh, there will be elements of that for sure, but it's going to present the transition of how society looks at Vincent, not as a crazy man, but as a beloved artist. Because nowadays, Vincent van Gogh is one of the biggest names in art, and you would see his name alongside many other world-famous artists like Matisse, Dali, Picasso, what was that guy's name? I was thinking, well, the guy who did the pointillism painting, hold on. George Seurat, there we go, okay. Seurat, Munch, the guy who did The Scream, and so much more. Basically, we're looking into how is it that society decided to accept this man after he ended up committing suicide. And in here, we do see that there is a long struggle to get to that position, because at that point, people only saw him as the crazy man and trying to figure out, it's like, how is it that he would suddenly just kill himself? And this was still in the case that he was still rejected by society. He was still seen as a crazy person. However, allow me to go and read you a little bit of this article here in the Animation Scoop that would talk about Loving Vincent. Now, what it pretty much stated right over here is regarding the fact that it is an oil-painted animated feature. Now, let me go and read you this little part. The film brings the paintings of Vincent van Gogh to life to tell his remarkable story. Every one of the 65,000 frames of the film is an oil painting, hand-painted by 125 professional oil painters who traveled from all across the world to the Loving Vincent Studios in Poland and Greece to be a part of the production. As remarkable as Vincent's brilliant paintings, is his passionate and ill-fated life and mysterious death. So you might be curious, how is it that they were capable of making an oil-painted animated feature? Well, basically, the style that I see right over here, the best way to describe it is that imagine something like some of the works of Ralph Bakshi. Like, think about his rotoscoped, hand-drawn animated features, like, for example, American Pop, or Lord of the Rings, or even, what else was there? Fire and Ice. So think about those movies. But instead of using cells in order to create the final product or to create the frame or to put it digitally onto computer and then immediately put in the colors on Photoshop or Illustration or something like that, what they did is create an entire oil painting. That oil painting is a frame. So quite literally, every frame in here is a work of art. And that's no joke, considering they're all oil paintings. It really is quite a work of art. And even the style itself. Like, they are going into something that is highly realistic, but in a way that is portrayed in the style of Vincent van Gogh's paintings. You could definitely see his influences onto here. So, in a way, it's almost like the movie is visually giving you the perspective of Vincent van Gogh himself and how he sees the world. And it really is quite unique. And let me tell you, as someone who has studied a lot of art history in school, this really is quite fascinating. Like, this is definitely something that would be absolutely worth looking into. And like I said before, considering that this does seem to be the film that presents the transition of how society sees him from being a crazy man to a beloved artist, it does seem like the kind of film that would present a brand new appreciation for this artist, you know, to see what he went through in life, what was his mentality, that even though he was a mentally disturbed person, he did contribute to some beauty onto the world with his paintings. So this is going to be something that is quite interesting to look into. Now, the only sad thing that I could say about this is that this is quite a very limited release. Apparently, going back into the animation scoop, it says that the only way that you can watch it is that apparently on September 22nd, they're going to have a screening in New York, and then the week after is going to be in LA. Rather, if there would be a limited release in theaters or crazy enough, a national release, like a nationwide release, that remains to be seen. But this is definitely something that I would really be interested to look into. I mean, this looks like something that could be highly innovative, it could be highly interesting, and I would probably be down to watch this. Now, for our next story right over here, we're going to be talking about what is happening at the box office. And for once, let us not look into some of the recent animated films that have been released. You know, screw the nut job, screw the emoji movie. We're going to talk about one of the animated films that have early on been released this summer. And I'm talking, of course, about Despicable Me 3. And in its current position, Despicable Me 3 in every single category is so far the highest grossing animated feature of the year, domestically, internationally, and also worldwide. But because of that major performance right over there, it really made the franchise get a massive achievement. Now, during last weekend, it really is official now. Despicable Me is now the highest grossing animated film franchise ever. Just completely ever in terms of worldwide. Now, what ended up happening was that at the last week's box office result, Despicable Me 3's performance ended up getting the entirety of the Despicable Me franchise, like when you combine them all into one, they managed to get a total of $3.528 billion. That's the accumulative total of all those four films that they've made so far. This has officially surpassed what the Shrek franchise made. Now, Shrek was the previous holder with all the five films that it released, including all the four movies like Shrek, Shrek 2, Shrek the Third, and Shrek Forever After, and also the spin-off film Puss in Boots, because that actually does count. And it would end up making a total of $3.51 billion. But now, with only four movies, the Despicable Me films managed to surpass it. And if you guys are curious regarding some of the other animated films that would actually be in the top spot among the highest grossing animated film franchises, the runner-ups include Ice Age 2, which made an accumulative total of $3.2 billion, There was also the Madagascar films, which made a total of $2.3 billion. And then you got the Toy Story films, which made almost $2 billion in total. Although I wouldn't be surprised if after the release of Toy Story 4, the Toy Story franchise would end up beating the Madagascar films. So that is still remain to be seen. So who knows how that's going to go with that. But anyways, enough about the other stuff. Let's talk about the Despicable Me films individually and how they managed to get that big record. So first and foremost, let us go and talk about the Despicable Me movies. Let's start with the first one now. And interestingly enough, that's actually the one that made the least amount of money among the entire crew. But the first movie in itself, it actually still managed to do extremely well, making almost $550 million globally, or specifically $546 million. And very interestingly enough, there is actually a very good reason why is it that it didn't perform as extremely well as some of the other films. And that is mainly because the first Despicable Me is actually the only one that was not released in China. I know, that sounds crazy considering that right now, the Despicable Me films are actually the biggest franchise in that country right over there. Like, if you think that where you are now, you feel like you can't turn around a corner without finding a Minion or something like that, oh my god, Minions are legitimately everywhere in China. Like all you see is just a sea of godforsaken Minions. It's ridiculous. Like, I remember Cartoon Brew actually posted some pictures on Twitter showing all the different advertisings that the Minions have done to in order to go and promote for Despicable Me 3, and it's insane. It's just the China is the entire country of China is completely yellow, and I do not mean that in a racist way. Don't take it in the wrong direction. I mean that with the Minions, so don't worry. I meant the Minions, but anyways, moving right along. So the first Despicable Me managed to make almost $550 million. But then things really have changed when Despicable Me 2 came in. And that's when it really went nuts and the popularity just skyrocketed when it managed to make a total of $976 million. So a little bit like what happened with the Shrek franchise, the second one is what really cemented the huge popularity and where it really gathered some worldwide fame. That's when things really went nuts on that one. But then they actually proved that even without Gru, they can go really crazy at the box office. And I'm talking about the 2015 movie Minions, which is the prequel showing the history of Minions before they would ultimately meet up and become, the Minions of Gru. Now in here, not only are the Minions the highest grossing non-Disney animated feature of all time, but so far, it is the only non-Disney animated feature to cross $1 billion at the box office, making $1.16 billion. And that's mostly coming from the international waters. Domestically, it made about $336 million, which is still really good right over there. And then finally, we have Despicable Me 3. Now, with that one, it's not necessarily going as well as Despicable Me 2. Like, at this point, you do see that it is losing a little bit of traction. You're not going to find people saying that it is a bad film. Like, most people I've talked to, they say that it is okay. But what ended up happening is that box office analysts are pretty much confirming at this point that there is no way that Despicable Me 3 will be making over $1 billion. That is not going to happen. However, it is more than likely that what will ultimately happen is that the Despicable Me films will be able to cross $900 million. So it's pretty much right in the middle. It's like still definitely a lot better than Despicable Me 3. Oh, no. It's still better than the first Despicable Me, but not as good as the first, not as good as Despicable Me 2. So as I am recording this, so far it has a total of $888 million at the box office. Again, like I said, so far this is actually the highest grossing animated feature of the year, domestically, internationally, and worldwide. So it really is on the right track in order to surpass $900 million at the box office. Now, the funny thing is, though, is that at this point, the Despicable Me movies are not necessarily done yet. There is one more film that they are releasing, and I feel like for the sake of Illumination, I think it's probably best that, you know, they don't end up with another Ice Age franchise. So what they do is, I think it's probably best that, like, they should probably stop here, and then they'll have their final Despicable Me movie, which in this case is going to be Minions 2, which is going to be coming out, I believe, in 2020, is it? Where does it say? I'm using my source here, by the way, coming from Deadline. And I think it mentioned at some point, when is it that Minions 2 is going to be released? I swear, I thought it mentioned it, but okay. But anyways, okay, maybe it didn't. But yeah, you kind of got the idea. Is that it's either in 2019 or in 20... No. Actually, you know what? Screw it. No, I'm pretty sure Minions 2 is going to be coming out in 2020. And I think that one is really going to be cementing the, like, just the massive achievement that the Despicable Me franchise has done. And honestly, it's going to be extremely rare to see if there's going to be any other animated feature or animated franchise that would be able to cross that mark. So who knows how that's going to go. But overall, with the performance of the Despicable Me movies, I feel like it really did a fantastic job. And I feel like this is something that they definitely earned it, you know? I don't know about you guys, but for me, I feel like the Despicable Me movies, you know, they're pretty good. They're not the best animated films of the decade, or they're not some of the best animated films ever. But, you know, they're still entertaining. They're still a lot of fun to watch. And even with the third film, sure, it's probably one of the weakest of the bunch, but it still is fine as it is. It still did some stuff that are fun, that are entertaining, that brought a lot of smiles among audiences. So this is really nice. And you definitely can tell that at this point, we are definitely moving to a new generation of animation where now Shrek really is just a thing of the past, and that his time is just between 2001 and 2006, and then it's just dead from then on. But with the Despicable Me franchise, I think, like I said before, I think it's probably best that they should stop at Minions 2 and, like, just claim their prize, you know? Just pretty much stay on top while they can. Don't overdo it. Don't run it to the ground. Just stay in a nice position. And honestly, I do feel happy for Illumination and for the Despicable Me franchise. So I just want to say congratulations to the Illumination team for creating such a massive phenomenon. And I really do hope for the best in your future. But yeah, so with all that said, long live Gru. Okay, so for our next story right over here, we're going to be talking about another animated phenomenon that was released in this decade, which is Frozen. But we're not necessarily going to be looking into the animated film of Frozen. This time, we're going to be looking into the Broadway version of Frozen. Yes, there's going to be a Broadway musical that will be coming soon. And what is currently going on is that they are doing a lot of rehearsals for it. They are preparing for everything. And they even put up a little behind the scenes video of what's going to be going on and talking a little bit about some of their mindsets on trying to turn an animated film into a Broadway show, basically, and being involved with many of the people that worked on it, including Jennifer Lee, one of the directors, and also Robert and Kristen Anderson Lopez. So you got those dynamic duo also returning into it. And I think the best way to describe this Broadway show is that it's going to be a little bit like the live show that is in Disney's California Adventure, where I noticed that in the backgrounds, they are going to include some puppets as well, like puppets for Sven and also puppets for Olaf, and on top of some creative costumes. However, on Playbill.com, they have officially revealed some of the more noticeable differences that will happen between the animated film and the Broadway show, and they really did mark some big ones. Like, for example, allow me to read here again from my source on Playbill. It stated, "The show is set to open with a group of creatures referred to as hidden folk, similar to the Scandinavian folklore of huldufolk, but with more animalistic qualities." Okay, so what are those hidden folk doing in this Broadway show? Well, apparently the tailed figures will be replacing the trolls seen in the animated feature. Gone with the trolls are the monstrous snowman Marshmallow and the wolves that chase Anna, Kristoff, and Sven. So basically, they did remove a few of the different creatures that appeared in the animated film, and they're going to be replacing the trolls with these creatures known as hidden folk. And I do understand that change with the trolls, because technically they are crafted to be more animated characters, because technically they're supposed to be these little creatures that are also part rock. And the way that they move is that they would roll around as rocks. So something that is not necessarily easy to convey onto Broadway. So you might as well change it a little bit to become these animalistic characters called hidden folk. Now, rather if they're going to have the exact same role as the trolls, where they're going to be like the parental figures of Kristoff, and if they're going to sing Fixer Upper, that is still remain to be seen. And I'll just say this right now, the one thing that I am highly disappointed about this entire change, like one of the big things that I am disappointed that they're going to remove, is actually the aspect of Marshmallow. Now, that would have been awesome to see the technical innovations that they can to bring that character to life onto Broadway, but I guess it would be a little bit too expensive. And then again, there are a lot of shows that are kind of doing the same thing. Like Shrek the Musical has already done that by bringing in a giant character with the dragon, you know, Donkey's girlfriend, and stuff like that. So I don't know, maybe they just did it to cut down costs, but that's probably the one thing I am a little bit disappointed that they would have to remove. But that's just a minor thing. You know, that's not entirely what made Frozen the phenomenon that it is today. Okay, so we talked about the big aspects that they pretty much replaced or removed. Is there any new additions that they have added? Well, not necessarily, but the ones that they did, they're pretty much the ones that you would expect coming from a Broadway show. Let me continue from my source. Also new to the title are roughly a dozen new songs penned from the film's Oscar-winning husband and wife pair, Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez. Joining favorites such as Let It Go and Love Is an Open Door are numbers including Dangerous to Dream and a flashy Act 2 anthem, both for Elsa. And I mean, that's honestly pretty good right over there. I'm glad that they are going to go and include a lot more songs into it, because that's probably one of my biggest criticisms, or probably my biggest criticism with the Frozen animated feature, is the fact that in terms of songs, they feel completely unbalanced. The songs themselves are fantastic. I mean, Do You Want to Build a Snowman is great. Let It Go is amazing. Also, there is, what else is there? Love Is an Open Door, For the First Time in Forever, In Summer, and so much more. The songs themselves are great. It's just the order that they place them feels very inconsistent. Like during the first half of the movie, it feels like it's just almost an opera in a sense, where they jump from song after song after song after song. But then suddenly, when the second act comes in, they probably sing a few, like, not even in summer. Like, they would sing Fixer Upper, and then that's it. Like, the entire musical aspect just suddenly drops. And while I was watching it, it did make me wonder, is like, whatever happened to the songs? Like, did it give up on being a musical? So at least with this, it'll make it more consistent in terms of the musical numbers. They'll add a lot more into the end, and maybe they'll spruce up some of them during the beginning. And on top of that, it is going to be interesting to see how these exclusive musical numbers are going to be in this movie, because it really does happen when there are some musical numbers on the Broadway version that end up actually being as good as what they did for the animated film. Like, one that I remember was, Shadowland from the Lion King Broadway show. That's the one where Nala decided to go in pursuit to go and find Simba after Scar pretty much ruled the Pride Lands and things were going terribly. And it really is such a powerful song, and even uses some of the original Hans Christian Andersen, the Hans Zimmer score from the original movie, like going da, na, 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 na. You know, just going with that rhythm, it really is awesome. And also another great one, it actually comes from the Beauty and the Beast Broadway show. I think the song is called If I Can't Have Her. The best way to describe it is that that song is actually the precursor to Evermore. That was the main Beast song that he would sing. But who knows how that's going to happen. Maybe that's going to happen with Dangerous to Dream. Or we'll see how it goes from there. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it's going to go with the whole Frozen musical. Because for the most part, when it comes to Disney and making Broadway musicals, their track record is so far really good, and they have a lot of huge successes in their hands, including, of course, The Lion King is one of the biggest Broadway musicals of all time. You also got Aladdin, and even the ones that are no longer there that are also major hits like Mary Poppins, Newsies, and also Beauty and the Beast. But it does happen at the same time when some of their Broadway shows aren't necessarily big hits. Like, it can happen when they would release something that would only last for like a couple of years and then that's it. Like, some examples that I can think of would include Tarzan, yes, the one based on the 1999 animated feature. And then there is another one, which is surprisingly enough, The Little Mermaid. I mean, considering how hugely successful stuff like Aladdin and what else? There was Aladdin, The Lion King, and Beauty and the Beast are, you'd think The Little Mermaid would be perfect for it, but no, like, it tried and it didn't necessarily work out, so that was a little bit of a flop. But chances are, it could be possible with Frozen, that could actually become a hit, and especially the fact that they did bring back some of the original people from the animated film, including Jennifer Lee writing the book, and also, of course, Bobby and Kristen Lopez working on more of the songs. It will stay true to the animated feature. So we'll just have to wait and see how it goes. But if you guys are really excited to see how the Frozen Broadway musical is going to happen, well, it's going to have a sneak preview at the Denver Center of Performing Arts on August 17th. And then it will officially make its Broadway debut at the St. James Theater on February 22nd, 2018. And so, finally, we shall now end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And this week, right over here, I just want to mention this right now. The reason why I want to go and talk about this, it's because it is so unusual, and the more I would think about it, the more insane that it feels, and the more that it's just, I have to ask, why? Now, this is not necessarily related to the news itself. It's not related to the person involved with it. It's not necessarily related to the animated project. This is more on a design choice that just makes me ask, why? Now, to give you guys a little bit of context, allow me to tell you a little bit of what the news is. So apparently it was reported that Cher is going to be a special guest voice for the Netflix exclusive series, or I think it's only exclusive to Netflix, but it says it is coming from DreamWorks Animation TV. It's for the show Home Adventures with Tip and O, which you guys may know is based on the 2015 DreamWorks animated film Home. Now, in this one, Cher is going to be playing a character named Cherkophony. And allow me to read you the description of her using my source here on The Hollywood Reporter, saying, Cher will play a new character, Cherkophony, the biggest rock diva in Boovesland. Cherkophony is an innovative, avant-garde girl-boy boov known for her dissonant music and outrageous fashion sense. So in a way, they want to make like the Lady Gaga version of the boobs. She is elusive and mysterious and so enormously popular that the only way she can go out in public is in disguise. And the reason why she is appearing in this show is because there's going to be this episode where Tip and O are going to suddenly become rock stars. And it's just going to be your typical 15 minutes of fame episode where they have to make the choice of either being hugely popular or they just want to be themselves and be happy and all that kind of stuff. But the reason why it just explodes my mind, I'm just going to say this right now and I'm going to repeat. It's not because of Cher. It's not because of the episode itself. And it's not because of the TV show. It's not necessarily because of the Home spinoff series. The reason why I'm just going nuts over this, and the reason why I just feel like I have to ask why, it's because of Cherkophony's character design. Now, I know it may seem a little bit weird, and it could sound like nitpicking, but it's just one of those things. I look at it, and I feel like the drill sergeant in Full Metal Jacket. Like, I look at it and I go, holy Jesus. What is that? What the fridge is that? I mean, seriously, it is just nuts. Now, of course, you cannot see it because you guys are only listening with your ears. You're only using your ears. This is a podcast, after all. So I'm going to do the best of my ability to describe you what the fridge I'm even looking at with this picture that The Hollywood Reporting is pretty much using to represent Cherkophony. Okay, so here it goes. So if you guys are listening to this, then I'm pretty sure you're familiar with what the aliens look like from Home. So, you know, you got these little blobby guys with little tentacles and stuff like that. So imagine those guys, but with this one, it's bright blue. And the makeup that she has on, like, that's even too much for a drag show. Like, you got these comically huge eyelashes, and also, like, the makeup is pretty much everywhere, including giant lipstick, and even wearing this little feather crown. But on top of that, you also see this boov wearing fishnet leggings. Like, you see the little fishnet leggings all around her. And, well, not all around her, just all around her little multiple legs. But on top of that, she is also wearing fishnet leggings on her ears. Yeah, because apparently that's a part of the weird fashion sense, is to have fishnet leggings on your freaking ears. I guess she figured it's long enough to wear them. I just don't see the point. But again, they want to do this Lady Gaga style of boov character, so they want to go with that. Okay. Now, I can give it a pass for all these things. I can give it a pass for all the fishnet leggings. I can give it a pass for all the crazy makeup. And I can give it a pass for the feather crown. What I'm not giving it a pass for is the fact that this boov is wearing not one, not two, but three bras. One, it's like One in the bottom, like near her waist. One that's in the middle, like in her stomach. And one where the boobs actually are. Now at this point, because of those three frickin' bras, it's making me ask questions that I shouldn't be asking. It's making me question about the anatomy of the boob. So with this design right over here, is it pretty much telling me that female boobs have six boobs? Is this the case right over here? Is this what this design is telling me? That female boobs have six tits or three pairs of tits? Is this what you're going with? Like, holy crap. This is not just like animals with teats either. This is not the case. Like, what this is suggesting right over here is that these boobs have six entire breasts that needed three bras to hold them up. That's the entire concept. Like, and also, it does make me wonder, like, looking at this, is this supposed to be sexy for a boob? Like, if they're gonna go and open a dirty magazine from the boob planet and stuff like that, if they go to Boob's Land and they pick up a dirty magazine, are they gonna see something like this? Is this supposed to be sexy for them? Are they supposed to be turned on by this? Like, what is this? Seriously, it's just nuts. And, like, if I would go into some more crazier adult questions, like, if this thing has six pairs of boobs, considering all the little legs that it has in there, how many vaginas does it have? And if that's the case, how many dicks do the male boobs have? I don't know. You see how this is just going insane? It's making me question about sexual things with the boobs. I should not be doing this, but somehow this design is making me do so. It's just wrong on so many levels. I remember talking with a friend of mine about this crazy design, and she was going hysterical about it. She thought it was entirely hilarious, and she even asked me, "Oh, what's wrong, Matt? Don't you like six boobs? Aren't you happy of the fact that there is six boobs right in front of you?" Yes, I would be happy about six boobs, but only if they're on three women. Not on this one mutated marshmallow. I mean, for God's sakes, why does this have six boobs? Why are you suggesting a DreamWorks character has six boobs on it? Holy crap. Now, I will say, though, there are also some professional artists who did comment on this design as well. And they did actually point out some positives. And the biggest thing that is actually good about this design is the use of color. And that is something that, even as an artist myself, I actually do agree. It's mainly how it's mainly this, I keep saying mainly a lot, but like the main aspect of this boob character is that it's all about the cold colors. Like, of course, the main boob is completely blue, and some of the highlights, like you see in her eyes, some of the feathers, and also, like, on some of the frickin' bras, you see some purple. So the main aspect is pretty much cold colors, but you also see a little bit of hot colors flashing in as well to make them pop out. So you see a lot of yellow, you see some yellows, some oranges, and some reds. So the color coordination onto this is actually a pretty good job. It's just the design itself is an entire frickin' nightmare. I mean, seriously, like, why would you present this? Why does this character have six frickin' boobs? Oh my god. And you know the crazy thing is that it pretty much does confirm that it has six boobs. It's not just because it has a crazy fashion trend. The Hollywood Reporter article did put up a little clip that would present some of Cher's acting skills on this home episode. And there is also another costume that Cher Coffany would wear. And the bra style that she has is a little bit of the same thing. It's suggesting that she has three pairs of boobs, but this time they're being covered by peacock feathers. So that's kind of the big thing. But again, it is interesting how it is using color coordination and mostly using cold colors, presenting the main light blue and also a lot of greens at the same time. Color coordination is great, but this design in general, it just makes no sense and it just freaks me out. Seriously, why would freaking DreamWorks make a character that has six pairs of boobs, or suggest that it has six pairs of boobs? It makes no sense. I want to ask a designer at DreamWorks Animation, what the fridge were you thinking, dude? All right, but anyways, that is all that I got for this week. So thank you guys so much for watching this episode, or listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or The Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be very nice of you. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that little like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!